Good morning and welcome to episode 24 of our Q&A experts from the employment team session. Thank you for all your positive comments as always, for sending in your questions, for signing up, for tuning in each week and for watching the videos online afterwards, which they're available in that way to watch. So as with previous weeks, we are actually going to look at four questions this week, so we've had quite a few in. I'll be looking at some questions together with my colleague Angela Carver, an associate in the employment team. So without further ado, I'll pass you on to Angela to start us off.
Thanks very much, Catherine. Good morning, everybody. The first question that I'm going to look at is whether or not you can force an employee to take holiday during their notice period. So this has come up quite a lot with people doing restructures and employees vacating businesses through natural reasons. So the rule of thumb is yes, you can. You do need to give at least double the amount of notice to the period of holiday that's needed. So if you want your employee to take 10 days holiday during their notice period, you need to give 20 days notice, for 5 days holiday, 10 days, and so forth. Now, similarly, an employer can generally refuse a holiday request, and it can cancel pre-arranged holidays by giving twice as much notice as the length of holiday that the employer is willing to take. So the rule of thumb is, you can ask them to take holiday, but you've got to give them double the amount of notice. You can cancel holiday, but you need to give them double the amount of notice. So as an employer, it's also important to note that you've got a discretion as to when an employee can actually take their holiday as well. They must be allowed to take their statutory holiday within the relevant leave year. And there are strict rules about enabling an employee to take the 4 weeks of holiday that you're entitled to under the European Working Time Directive. One thing to note is, as part of the response to the coronavirus pandemic, the government introduced greater flexibilities for employees and workers to carry over as much holiday as necessary, as it was not reasonably practicable to take during that leave year. So a holiday can now be carried over for a period of 2 years. We tend to find this is likely to be utilised by essential workers who've just been too busy during the pandemic to take holiday, and those who've been furloughed, where the employer couldn't perhaps afford to pay the top up of 100%. So rule of thumb, your employee gives notice, you can ask them to take their notice and their holiday during their notice period. Okie dokes, I'll pass you back over to Catherine.
Thanks, Angela. So another question we had in this week was about layoff and selection. So this is a situation where you're laying off staff. Do you have to conduct a fair selection process for layoffs as you would in relation to a redundancy? So this is where you've got a contractual right to lay off staff where there is a temporary downturn in work. First things first, there isn't any case law which deals with this specific point, and also there isn't anything set out in terms of selection of employees in the legislation which deals with layoff and the right to do that. So what you're looking at here, it's a question of your contract of employment. Of course, before we look at the contractual perspective, we always need to make sure that any selection process is not discriminatory in any way and will mean you fall foul of the provisions of the Equality Act. And that could be direct discrimination or indirect discrimination. So always need to have that in consideration. From a contractual perspective, so you need to check if there's anything expressly set out in the contract. That's rare, it's not something we would generally come across, but you always need to check and we would always advise that. If there's nothing expressed, then you're looking at whether any term could be implied in terms of the selection process. And again, there's been no case law looking at the actual selection process, but we have had some case law, that of Craig versus Bob Linfield and Son, that was the EAT, Employment Appeal Tribunal, and that the Employment Appeal Tribunal in that case refused to agree that there was an implied term in terms of the reasonableness of the period of layoff. So that didn't look at the selection, but it's just important to note that they didn't agree to imply a term in that case. What I would say is you need to look at the implied term of mutual trust and confidence. And that's the term where it requires an employer not to do something without reasonable cause, not to act in a manner that is likely to destroy or seriously damage the mutual trust and confidence with their employee. So you need to take that into account. So if you're going to look at selecting employees to lay off, if you're doing that without any consideration in any regard, you could potentially fall foul of that implied term. So in terms of answering the question, you're not there's nothing to suggest, and my view is that you're not subject to the same strict fair procedure with someone who has 2 years service when you're looking at selecting between employees as to whose position is redundant, when you have to apply that selection criteria and go through that very carefully and look and how you apply that to your staff. It's not that similar situation because you're not subject to that legislation and case law, which is specific to the right not to be unfairly dismissed. But you do need to show that you've applied your mind and you're showing some kind of reasoning for your selection. It's a bit like what we've seen over the past year and a half with selection for furlough leave. You're not subject to that strict selection criteria with redundancies, but there just needs to be some reasoning behind that. And what I would say to be very careful of is if you have laid off staff and then because of your circumstances, you then look, you're having to look at redundancies and start that consultation process. A bit like if you do have staff on furlough and you're then needing to move to make redundancies, you don't just use the decision, don't use the same criteria that you use to lay off or place staff on furlough. Make sure you will need to go through then a stricter selection criteria and a fair process and consultation in relation to that. And I'll pass you back to Angela for the next question.
Thanks, Catherine. The next question that I'm going to cover off is, can I extend a probation period? So the first thing to note is that there are no firm probation period extension laws in play. So the starting point for you is always going to be your contract of employment. What does the contract say about probation periods? Does it permit a probation period? Does it permit an extension? Most contracts will allot a 3 to 6 month probation period for new starters, where the period of notice is 1 week. And then in particular, what happens after the period of notice, the notice provisions increase to perhaps 3 months or 6 months, depending on the level of your employee. So if you are in the middle of a probation period and you think, actually, my employee is not quite up to scratch and where I want them to be, a conversation about the extension should occur before the probation period's up, particularly if your employment contract's mute on extension periods. So if your contract doesn't mention probation period extensions, what you need to do is have a look at four potential options, really. The first one is pass your employee, confirm their employment. They then go on to the normal contractual notice provisions, which are in your contract. Take a decision, actually, this employee is not for my business, and dismiss them. You can try and agree an extension of the probation by setting it out in writing and asking the employee to sign the letter, or you can just extend the probation period anyway. The latter potentially opens up to very minor risks, such as breach of contract if it's not in there, but if you've done this within the probation period and they would be dismissed anyway, the rule of thumb is that it would be approximately 1 week's notice, which is your statutory period to do that. So the way to look at a probation period is really that it's just a period of time for an employee to meet their targets and to see their compatibility within your business. And some employees naturally take longer than others to show their abilities at work. We found that particularly with staff who are starting employees working from home, rather than being in the office, it's taken them a bit longer to assess how they would fit into the team and how they'd fit into the nature of your business and actually how the work's going as well, because they don't have that hands-on training that they may have done. If your contract does permit extensions, task's much simpler. Just follow what's in your contract. So what are the reasons you can assess for extending a probation period? Well, things like your employee needs to improve their performance, they haven't quite met targets and you want to give them an opportunity to do so. Their attendance and punctuality is not quite where you would expect it to be, so you want to give them a further opportunity. You're not quite sure about the general conduct within the workplace and how they fit in. And actually what that you're looking at is this employee has moved into an environment where they're learning new skills or upskilling themselves, and it just takes a bit longer to meet the required standards. The other thing to note is if your employee suffers a leave of absence, in particular a long leave of absence, during the probation period, you might decide that an extension will give this employee the time that you need to review the criteria that they need to meet. Now, the extension should reflect the period of time the employee was absent. It shouldn't be a draconian measure. And you also need to be mindful of employees who might have a medical condition, which could fall into a disability. When you've decided that you want to extend somebody's probation, next step is to issue a probation period extension letter. In this letter, you would tell them how long the extension is going to be. It's usually, rule of thumb, is about a month, but you can subjectively assess that according to your business. You should explain in the letter the reasons for the extension, any new targets for your employee, and the date of the next performance review. Going forward, if your employee still doesn't perform, you can extend the probation period further, following the caveats we've just discussed earlier, or you can make that decision to dismiss. So one thing I would suggest is, if your contracts are moot on this point, is to amend contracts for new employees coming into the business. It would be nonsensical to do it for current employees because they've already passed their probation period. And it's to remember that a probation period extension is really a second chance for an employee who could have a positive impact on your business, but they've not quite proved themselves and they just need to have that little bit of extra time. Final thing to note is that as an employer, it's your duty to treat all your employees fairly, and you shouldn't let protected characteristics, so for example, age, gender, disability, influence your decisions when you're conducting that performance review of the employee. You, as mentioned, you need to consider any medical conditions, which could in fact be a disability under Section 6 of the Equality Act, and that you may need to be looking at things like reasonable adjustments to allow that employee to flourish in their role. Final note as well, just said final note twice. Final note is that the period of time to bring an unfair dismissal claim is 3 months less 1 day for an employee who has been employed for 2 years. Now, that 2 years can be circumvented if, for example, there are whistleblowing concerns. So an employee could say, I have made a protected disclosure and you have dismissed me as a result of that. Burdens then on you as the employer to show it's for a disparate reason. And similarly, if an employee is bringing a claim for discrimination, the 2-year limit is not in play. If you need any further guidance on probation periods or assistance drafting contracts, obviously you know where we are. I will pass you back over to Catherine for the final question.
Thanks, Angela. The final question is about employment contracts and whether you can sign those electronically. Obviously, something that has come is much more frequently asked about, given what we've experienced over the last year and a half. I think the first thing to think about and be aware of is, from a purely contractual perspective, an employment contract doesn't actually have to be in writing for a contract to exist. That's often something we speak to with clients and they ask about, and they think that because there's nothing written down in writing, there aren't contractual terms agreed. Now, an employment contract can be agreed orally and terms can be implied. Obviously, the preference, and we would always advise that terms are written down, main advantage of that is it's clear as to the detail and it avoids those arguments down the line. Obviously, separately from the contractual side, there is the statutory requirement under Section 1 of the Employment Rights Act about minimum terms that have to be included in terms for an employee. So that's just the main thing to think about. If you are then writing, having a written contract, you then need to obviously make sure that the basic requirements of the contract are satisfied. So you've got the offer, acceptance, consideration, intention to create legal relations. In terms of whether an employee can sign electronically, yes, they can do. And electronic signatures are also something that are admissible in legal relations when it comes to the authenticity or integrity of a contractual document. One thing I would say, and it's a big caveat that you need to be really careful on, is if you're thinking about going down this route in a particular situation, is if you are dealing with a contract, and you're likely to come across this more when you're dealing with a director service agreement or a contract for a more senior employee, is where you require the contract to be signed as a deed, executed as a deed. And that's likely to come about where you might have a power of attorney clause in that relating to intellectual property. Now, if that's the case, and you do, the contract does have to be executed as a deed, there are strict requirements in terms of the formalities required. It may well be that that's possible to do that electronically, but I would certainly look into that and make sure you are satisfying those requirements. Other than that, yes, it is something that you can do if required in terms of signing the contract electronically. So that's there's quick 4 questions we've covered this week. Please send more in if you do. We'll be covering it at our next session. Thank you for joining us. Just so you're aware, we continue to work hard to put extra content on our website, whether that be articles, blogs, podcasts, videos. All of those can be found at Sinton's website at www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look at your leisure. This includes all of the episodes of our Q&A over the last year and a bit. You can also follow the employment team on Twitter at Sinton's HR. Do tune in for our next session, which is going to be on Friday, the 24th of September. And do please feed in any questions to our marketing department if you wish those to be covered. We keep an eye on that and pick those up. If you do have any other legal inquiries, please do not hesitate to get in touch. We'll send you a link for the session near the time. From me and Angela and our marketing department, thank you very much and take care.